From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I know a lot of gardeners, including myself, who might be called oddballs. But today we're going to be more polite and talk about oddball edibles, unusual and unexpected vegetables you can grow in your own garden that you might skip over in the catalogs, or maybe they're not even in the catalogs you're reading, but rate being tracked down. Here to convince us of that as part of my annual Wintertime Seed series is Nikki Jabor, author of The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener, How to Grow Your Own Food 365 Days a Year, No Matter Where You Live. She's a contributor to the blog SavvyGardening.com and the creator of the award-winning radio program The Weekend Gardener that's heard throughout Eastern Canada. Welcome back to Away to Garden, Nikki Jabor. How are you, and happy seed shopping season.
Oh, isn't it the best time of the year? Thank you so much for having me. I love talking with fellow oddball gardeners.
Oddball. Well, I'm glad that you embrace the oddness.
I do. I think it kind of is what makes my garden interesting, you know, all the interesting, queer, quirky vegetables and edibles that I like to grow.
Yes. Well, and a million years ago, when I first worked at Martha Stewart Living Magazine and I was the garden editor, we kind of invented these kind of stories called glossaries, which were when you got to see, you know, every variety of fill in the blank. And I was in charge of those. And I would like call in, you know, at pumpkin harvest time, like, you know, 100 different varieties of unusual pumpkins and squash. And, you know, and we'd have these insane collections. And so I've been into this oddball thing for a really long time.
Well, and you know what? The great thing is, you know, seed companies and seed collectors are into it too.
Yes.
So it's really not that hard to find unique, fun, interesting things and easy things to grow in your vegetable and food gardens.
Yeah. Well, thanks to your 365-day book, I know you best as sort of a master of season extension, you know, harvesting things even in winter in Canada, you brave soul. brave oddball.
Sometimes I wonder.
but, you know, what is a person such as yourself, a gardener such as yourself, I mean, you're in Nova Scotia, of all places, on the path, like, what got you on the path toward a collection of edibles from around the globe? Because a lot of these oddballs are not, you know, your typical thing.
Yeah, you know, I know, because it's not just the heirloom and the quirky I'm looking for. I love global vegetables. And for me, it began with a snake gourd. And I was growing these, and, you know, I grow them every, you know, fall for my kids. We like to see who can get the biggest snake gourd, the ones that grow 5 to 6 feet tall. And it was one year, though, my mother-in-law had wandered up into the garden in midsummer. And she's from a small mountain village in Lebanon. And she's been in Canada for 30 years. But, you know, she came up to get some parsley and get some of the early tomatoes. And then she looked over at this A-frame trellis that was already just covered in this big snake gourd vine, and there were the one-foot fruits, the immature fruits hanging from it, and she just kind of freaked out. She was like, oh my gosh, and she started talking in Arabic, which is a problem for me because I don't speak Arabic, but she was going on, and she's like, it's kukuzi, and
yes.
Kukuzi, for her, is this summer squash-type vegetable. I did not know my, you know, ornamental gourds that we're growing were edible, and so it kind of made me think, you know, of course we picked them all, so we had no big gourds that year, but she was so happy, and she made the most wonderful dishes from it, and it kind of got me thinking, what else could I grow that she might recognize from her childhood, or, you know, because in Lebanon, of course, the whole life revolves around fresh food and family meals, and I thought, I'm sure there's other things that I grow, because of course in my cupboard I have things like za'atar. I'm like, what can I grow that will make her happy, and then I just, you know, took off with other countries. You know, I'd do research, I'd look for seeds and grow these things, and some things did not work in Nova Scotia, but so many things did, and they work in, you know, a lot of different places across North America. That's kind of what sparked my little journey into global vegetables.
I love it. I like when there's an emotional, you know, kind of provenance to the story, just like there's an emotional provenance to the crops we then go and cultivate. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they're historical.
Exactly.
They have legends about them. They've been passed down through the generations. Plus, they have a meaning for us, you know, through someone close to us. So that's...
Absolutely. And yeah. I mean, a lot of the vegetables I grow, you know, I mean, I grow lots from different countries and of course, a lot of heirlooms and just quirky things. But a lot of the Lebanese ones, like, they become almost like annual rituals for us. Like, when we pick the chickpeas, you know, my father-in-law, he's not a gardener, although he freely dispenses gardening advice to me all the time. He likes to grow chickpeas. And he just buys them from a bulk store. Like, they're not a seed company, chickpea. He plants them in his garden. And then sometime in, like, mid to late August, when the plants are lush and they're covered in the plump little pods, everything gets pulled up at once. It's thrown on the big table outside, and everybody gathers around and plucks off those plump little chickpeas, the green ones, and we eat them like shell peas. Everybody, yes, just eats them right then and there. And it's such a fun family thing we look forward to. And it's just one of the reasons having your own garden just makes these things possible.
Well, and with those two examples you've given, both the cocozelle or cucuzzi or snake gourd, yeah, whatever we want to call it, it has, and the chickpeas, the ceci, is that how we say it in Italian? I think ceci. They have different phases, and they're a delicacy or an ornamental, in the case of the gourd, at different phases. So if you didn't grow it, you probably can't get it at these, like the green chickpeas. I see them in the at our farmers market sometimes now. They're like a specialty item. A few growers.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the Berkshires of Massachusetts, Hudson Valley of New York, we have a lot of, you know, people growing oddball things. We have a lot of oddballs here.
I've been there, and I love it. And that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah. So, but you know, if you wouldn't know that, you would never have had a chickpea except the kind that's dried, and then you soak it and cook it, or in a can, you know, if you had not grown it yourself. So you were mentioning Lebanese and so forth. And so what about your palate of, say, cucumbers? I bet you're not satisfied with just your average cucumber, are you?
No. In fact, I haven't grown a typical straight A-type cucumber in a very, very long time. And I got to say, cucumbers this past summer were a bit of an obsession for me. You know, Indian cucumbers, Asian cucumbers, you know, Italian cucumber, melons, the Lebanese cucumbers. And for the first time in like 2 decades, I've always searched for the cucumber that in Lebanon is called mekti. And, you know, my mother-in-law, I'll grow different types, and I'm like, these are the seeds I got. And she's like, no, not it. You know, and I've searched and searched. I know. Finally, this year, I found some, and they were perfect. And I have a picture of she and my father-in-law holding up the first harvest of these cucumbers. And it was the exact ones that they had grown up with in their village. And it was so delicious. I grow a lot of different types of cucumbers. The Indian cucumbers are kind of a pet favorite for me. Pune Kira, Sikkim. And Sikkim is really kind of cool because it's almost reddish-brown. And it looks like a giant russet potato when you harvest it. And we just kind of sliced them in half. And again, they were so big and so unusual, but they were so delicious. I don't know if you've ever tried some of the Indian cucumbers.
Now, where are you finding crazy things like, and Mekti, is it M-E-K-T-I? Is that how you
translate? It is, yeah. I'm butchering the actual pronunciation
of it.
I try, but, you know, I do my best. But yes, a lot of these things, actually, the wonderful news is that seed companies like Baker Creek, you know, carry Sikkim cucumbers. A lot of the smaller companies, Johnny's, you know, even Fedco in Maine, they're carrying a lot of these things now. And it's great because it makes it easy, and they don't have to order from 50 different seed companies.
Okay. So cucumbers, and are these all vining types, or are they bush types as well? Or what's the general, or is there nothing
vining,
general?
Vining, yeah, they're vining.
That's what I would think.
Yeah, and this year I did a complete garden reno. I bulldozed my garden back in the spring, and I rebuilt it up with 20 new fresh raised beds. And so I created these trellises and tunnels and cucumber tunnels. So I did grow everything vertically for my cucumbers. I don't want them to sprawl on the ground because it wastes too much space. So everything grew vertically, and I had excellent harvests. I had, knock on wood, no cucumber beetles. Mm-hmm. Powdery mildew was kept to a minimum, and the harvest just kept coming and coming. It was fantastic.
So we have global cucumbers. That's in your palette of oddballs. And I think you told me that you grow some kind of artichoke, Chinese artichoke, or some, but it wasn't really an artichoke. But what in the heck is that?
I do grow a Chinese artichoke, and it's also called Crohn's, which is not a very attractive name.
No.
But they're not really that attractive in terms of a vegetable. You eat the rhizome, and they're a long season vegetable. So you know, I get some of the tubers in late winter, early spring, and I pot them up like when I plant my tomatoes indoors under my grow lights. And you know, about 6 weeks later, I've got these nice plants, and then they go into the garden. And then I didn't actually start harvesting them until late November, and I just dug up the plants. And as you pull them up, there's all these 1 to 2 inch little tubers that look like white grubs or tiny little Michelin.
Now, are these one of the Andean, like from the Andes kind of things? Are these one of the Andean tubers? Like, do you
from what I understand, no, they actually do hail from Asia.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Some, you know, in England they're often, or sorry, in France they're often called Japanese artichokes or Chinese artichokes.
Oh. But
that is generally the name, and they're in the Lamium family.
Oh.
Yeah, they have square stems, just like mint, but they're not invasive. You know, they. But if you do leave a few over the winter, they will pop back up in spring. But they're just so interesting, and you got these tiny little quirky little tubers, and we just give them a quick rinse off, use a toothbrush to kind of scrub the dirt off them, and we blanch them for a minute or two in water, and then pan fry them in butter, and oh my gosh, the crunch, just a kind of a nutty-ish flavor, really delicious, and when you serve them to people, they have no idea what they're eating, but they all love it.
Okay, well, that is a totally new one on me, and I'll tell you what, Nikki, I have seen a lot of plants, and that's not one that I know, so I am looking that one up.
Well, I figure, I feel like I just won the lottery there.
Yeah.
I've got a new one for you to try.
Yeah, I haven't always grown them all, but boy, I've been around a lot of plants for a lot of years. That's
well,
amazing.
Well, I'm sure. I should be asking you for variety advice. I'd love to hear. You know, it's one of the great things about gardening, finding out what other gardeners love to grow and then trying it yourself as well.
Yeah. So lately, a number of friends of mine have, like the last 3 or 4 years especially, they all, one after another, not knowing one another, different people from different regions of the country, are like into ground cherries. What about you?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first grew ground cherries years ago, you know, I just planted two plants, and, I gave them a little bit of space. I'm like, you know, they're not going to be that big, but they're a little bit of a thug in the garden. They really do grow low, like a ground cherry. They grow maybe a foot tall, but they grow maybe 4 to 5 feet, you know, in diameter, and they take up a lot of space, but they pump out those tiny little fruits. They're the size of, like, small marbles, and when they're beautiful, deep, golden color, I think they taste like butterscotch with like a little bit of pineapple. Oh my gosh, they're sublime. It's my husband's new favorite crop, really. We make the most wonderful topping for ice cream out of them with, you know, vanilla, a nice vanilla ground cherry compote. It's delicious. And they're, again, so easy to grow. Most garden centers will sell transplants, the larger garden centers now, so you don't have to start them indoors yourself, although you can.
Wow.
But definitely worthwhile. And the kids love them, too.
I think they're a genus Physalis, is that correct?
And that's correct, yes.
They're solanaceous, I think, yes.
And yeah, they're a tomato cousin.
Yeah, so like if people have grown tomatillos, they almost might look like a tiny little relative of that as well, I think, yeah?
They do, because they start with a husk, like a tomatillo
yes.
does.
Yes.
And then inside, you know, they produce this, again, maybe like, I was going to say centimeter, but I'll say half an inch diameter, little fruit. And with the first they're green, and you don't eat them when they're green. You wait until they fall, actually, from the plant. You just kind of give your plant a tousle, and they fall down to the ground. And once they're brown and the inside fruit is that caramel color, they're ready to eat. And if some fall off and they're still green, well, you just put them on your counter for 2 or 3 days, and they quickly mature into that wonderful deep color.
Now, you confessed to growing chickpeas, which a lot of people don't grow dry beans at all, and I've just been experimenting with the last few years, and it's been fun and productive and so easy because you kind of, you know, let them just do their thing until they're ready. And, did you really grow rice, or did I misunderstand that? Because I sort of woke up this morning before I came to the studio, and I said, did she really tell me that?
Yeah. You know, I did. One of our local heirloom seed companies, it started a couple years ago by this 16-year-old kid who was just, you know, obsessed with heirlooms, and I think he's 21 or 22 now, but he's still amazing, and he collects all these unique seeds, and so he sent me a pack with my order this year of Dvorskian rice. It's an upland type of rice, so it doesn't grow in a paddy. It doesn't need flooding. It grows in regular garden soil, short grain. Yeah, short season, short grain rice. He told me, by the time I got my packet, it was late April, and he's like, you should start them in early April. I was like, oh, no. But I started, like, 8 seeds. They all came. I had these 8 wonderful rice plants in my garden all summer. Drought year, they didn't get a lot of love from me. They grew huge. Each one produced, I don't know, like 8 to 12 tills, you know, tillers of the panicles of rice. They were probably the most beautiful edible I've grown. Everybody wanted to touch them and asked about them. And then come like September, early October, they turned golden. Then we harvested the rice, and it was easy to grow, but I think next year I'll even grow it in my containers with some petunias and other ornamentals because, again, they were so beautiful all season long.
Wow, that's interesting. So and a lot of these kind of grain-like things are incredibly ornamental. You know, I'm thinking of some of the sorghums and
exactly.
Some. I think quinoa, some of them can be attractive. Anyway, we think of them as sort of nondescript, but they're not at all. They're quite beautiful many times. But
I mean, I got a nice harvest from it. And, you know, it's one of those crops that I'm never going to produce enough rice for my family's needs.
No.
But, you know, we all had a nice feed from it. It was such a fun talking point, and it showed, you know, my kids how rice actually grows and how much work it can be, you know, because you have to take the little husks off each one. You kind of pound them, which was fun. But if we were doing it on a regular basis, it would be a lot of work. But you also mentioned quinoa, and that's one of my favorite crops to grow too, as is amaranth, but we don't grow it for the seeds. We grow it for the leaves. It's a great spinach substitute.
The quinoa or the amaranth or both?
Yes, both. They're cousins.
Okay,
And oh my gosh, look, so oftentimes the spinach dips I make or the spinach in my pastas or in my salads, it's quinoa leaves. Just don't tell the kids, okay? Because they will eat it if they think it's spinach, but not if they think it's something weird.
Any particular varieties of either the amaranth or the quinoa that you can think of that come to mind that you've liked especially for the sort of home garden? Because some of the amaranths especially, you know, can be quite statuesque plants.
Yeah, there's a lot of different varieties, especially of quinoa. Generally, you're going to get quinoa.
Yeah.
For amaranth, it's a tangle of different types. And I remember when I was writing my next book, it took me about a month to sort out all the amaranths and such. Amaranth tricolor, just green amaranth or amaranth tricolor, is probably one of the best types just to grow.
Okay.
Those ones are really good and very easy. And yes, they can get tall, but the key is you just keep cutting them off. So as your amaranth gets to about 2 feet tall, cut it down to a foot. It'll branch out, get thicker, and as it comes up to 2 feet again, cut it off. And that way you also don't get you don't get the seed heads, which means you don't get amaranth babies promiscuously popping up around your garden.
Well, I have a lot of promiscuity in my garden, but not amaranth specifically, but there's definitely, between the insects, the rodents, some of the voles seem to be promiscuous as well. And then, as you say, volunteer plants from things I didn't like. If I have calendulas, for instance, which I love to have in the vegetable garden, calendulas, they're, you know, edible flowers as well as beautiful, and they seem to be attractive to a lot of nice insects and so forth. But let them go to seed, and you will have them forever.
Yeah, I think I only planted them once, maybe like 14 years ago. But I let like maybe 15 or 20 clumps come up around the vegetable garden every year, and then the rest get, well, tossed in the compost pile.
Yes, yes, yes. But you will definitely have them forever.
Yes.
So what about your salad bowl? Is it like lettuce or what's in your salad bowl? Because I'm suspecting there's some oddballs in there too.
Yeah, oh my goodness, for sure. Yes, I grow lots of different types of lettuce because, you know, I love lettuce. The kids love lettuce. But, you know, my global vegetable quest also led me to a lot of other different types of greens. Like, for example, one of the favorite salad greens in our garden are dandelions. And not your typical dandelions, but like Italian dandelions, which aren't really dandelions. They're basically a card-carrying member of the chicory family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like endive and radicchio, they're related to those guys. Staple ingredient in Italy, oh my gosh, they have such a great flavor. And some of them even have like bright purple or red veins, so they're very beautiful in the salad bowl too. So that's one of my mother-in-law's favorites. She loves the bitter greens, so I do grow things like dandelion. And another favorite we grow is purslane, which is a weed.
Yes,
it
is a weed. Don't let that one go to flower and seed, folks.
Yeah, and you know what? The funny thing about the native purslane weed, it's low-growing. It forms like a low mat.
Yeah.
It is perfectly edible, and it's delicious. But I prefer to grow some of the improved cultivars you can get from, like, Johnny Seeds or any of the seed companies. And they're upright. They grow maybe, like, a foot or so tall, dense branching, and they produce, like, leaves that are probably four or five times the size of the weedy ones. And, you know, they're succulent, they're crisp, they're mild. And it took me about 4 years to figure out what my mother-in-law was trying to ask me to grow. And so finally, I just got on like Google and I searched up all these salad green images. And finally, we were able to pinpoint the one she wanted me to grow, the purslane. And now I grow it every year for her. And we all love it. It's delicious. She just, you know, mixes the leaves simply with a little lemon juice, a little olive oil, sprinkle of salt. And it's just a great fresh garden salad.
Mm. Any favorite lettuces you want to recommend?
Well, I think, I mean, it's kind of boring, maybe, but red salad
too.
Bowl.
Yeah, me too. I'm an oak leaf and black-seeded Simpson. I like some of the old-time boring ones, too. So
I do, too. But like red salad bowl, for me, it's not only, you know, good for spring and summer and fall, but it even does well in my winter cold frames. You know, it's just so easy to grow. It's long-standing. It doesn't bolt too quickly. I love it.
Yeah, I like, among red ones, I like Merlot, which is so super dark, you know, from out in Wild Garden Seed out in the Pacific Northwest. So we have maybe, you know, 4 minutes, something like that left, and I want to talk just about your All America selection sort of trialing that you've been doing, because I think that's another sort of one of your oddball, the branches of your oddballness.
Thank you very much. I agree. Well, I was lucky enough in the summer of 2015 to actually go to California with All America Selections, and I got to do a tour of seed breeding companies up at the California coast.
So I visited six or seven. You went to the PAC trials, did you?
I did.
Yeah, me too. I did. Yeah, I did a few years ago, and it's amazing. So that's, for people who don't know, that's kind of like the, almost like the trade show, but you're going from place to place, from company to company, of seed, the wholesale seed business.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, what a treat, because we actually got to talk to the people who are breeding the new types of basil and peas and tomatoes in the fields and ask them why, what are they breeding for, and, you know, what are they looking for, disease resistance, you know, dwarf growth or what have you. And it's amazing. It's eye-opening. And, you know, of course, they're growing hybrid seeds, which are different than heirlooms, but they make outstanding garden selections as well.
Yeah. So what kinds of things did you trial this year with from the AAS list?
Oh, my gosh. Chef's Choice yellow tomato.
Oh.
Amazing. Have you tried that one?
No.
I grew it nearby my persimmon tomatoes, and these outperformed. I mean, these guys were early and huge, and the flavor was sublime. They were ridiculously productive. They didn't stop until we got frost, and, I mean, the harvest was just, again, it was the production just went on and on. I could talk about it all day, I think. And there's also one called Chef's Choice Pink, mm-hmm. but the Chef's Choice Yellow, I mean, it was just such a great orange tomato, and I love orange tomatoes.
So that was a
really,
winner.
Really good one.
Okay.
Yeah, it would definitely.
any other goodies?
Oh, my gosh. Squash, winter honey baby, like a small, small winter squash. But I loved it because it was just, you know, perfect size for like a family for a meal. You didn't have a whole bunch of leftovers. Each plant produced like 4 to 6 of these. Super compact. So I'd plant them at the edge of my raised beds, and they'd cascade over, which looked really cool. And then you'd get these big fruits hanging off, and everybody was just kind of like, what is that plant? Because it just looks so neat. I'm also a bit of a basil freak, and basil Dolce Fresca, I believe it's pronounced, was a really, really wonderful basil, very compact, and it was very dense, so it had a lot of stems, and it stayed nice and round in the garden, and we harvested a ridiculous amount of basil
now,
from those plants.
Are the leaves big, like a Genovese type, or are they like the small leaves?
Big.
So they're big leaves, but it stays compact, even though it has big leaves.
Yeah, I mean, it stayed about, I would say, 12 to 15 inches tall.
Yeah,
it looked like a regular sweet basil, same size leaves. But again, it just didn't get that huge. Great in containers, but amazing in my raised beds, too.
So the last quick question before I have to let you go, you're a year-round gardener and harvester, and you have insulated tunnels and all kinds of things going on. But when the ground softens in the coming spring, it's ready for your first outdoor 2017 sowings. What are those for you? I know you're all now. You're drooling, right?
I'm so all about the seed catalogs right now. Because I have cold frames and mini tunnels, as space opens up, I will start planting in those in late February, early March,
uh-huh.
and at that time, I'll start planting, you know, more spinach and more Swiss chard and more baby kale. And even beets and, you know, carrots as we get into March. And so I'll be starting with greens, generally, and that'll start for me again. Assuming Mother Nature cooperates, hopefully late February, if not, probably early to mid-March. Then we'll start harvesting those months before most gardeners even start their first sowing.
Well, I always love speaking to you. It's been so much fun. Nikki Jabor, and author of The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. I'm going to do a book giveaway, of course, because people love that book. And I hope I'll speak to you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Margaret. Have a great day.
And thanks to all of you for listening to. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy seed shopping meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.